Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, the MTG dad of all MTG dads, even though he doesn't have kids, Trey McLarnon.
You guys are doing great this week.
Oh, man.
I've never heard that before from a dad.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm trying out a new
therapy. The podcast is not about your personal issues.
It could be. Let's see how that goes.
We're also joined by the Mason Clark. Oh, wait, no. It's Mason E. Clark, because you can't afford your own Twitter handle.
I can't afford. So I'm supposed to buy out. Can I tell a story on the podcast with the Instagram guy that harasses me trying to get Mason Clark on Instagram?
Yeah, go for it.
There's this guy on Instagram who's also named Mason Clark who harasses me. And I don't mean like he bothers me. I mean like he insults me and attacks me and I block him and then he gets unblocked like every 6 months. And I had to complain to Instagram about it. It's super weird. It's the reason my Instagram is private.
Yeah, I did know this because you've told me this story before.
It's the craziest thing. I live the blessed life. This is the craziest thing that's happened to me.
Hey, to be fair, there's a person that decided to make a Twitter account with my name and name it Dick Spencer. So, you know.
So now I got to leave this podcast PG-13. It's doing more work for me, I see.
Yeah, if you could bleep that out, Mason, that would be really helpful.
Too much work. Keep going. I had my brothers in the car and the phone, the song cuss. And I said, we don't tell our parents about that, do we? And they said, nope. And I'm like, good boys. And then we kept driving.
You know what's not too much work? You know, Mason might think it's too much work to edit out, you know, my word on the podcast, but what's not too much work is become a patron at patreon.com/dcmtg. You can join our newest patron who gets a shout out, Mason.
Koi Kaichi, thank you so much for joining the Patreon.
Yeah. I you know, it's been really cool the last week. I've gotten a lot of support messages of support, and you know, I think that one of the really cool things about doing the podcast with John and Seth is that I got to make some awesome friends. Like I legitimately consider John a friend, and I am, and you know, Seth is a person that I'll be a fan of forever now. And like, that was really cool. But I'm excited that people are excited about the future of the show. And you know, our Patreon only went up this week, and it means a lot. It legitimately means a lot. And I'm not going to say his name right, man.
Koi Kaichi, I believe is how you say it. I haven't talked to him in 3 years in person, only on Messenger, so it's been a bit.
Koi Kaichi is a huge portion of that, and I really appreciate it. It actually means a lot. So let's talk about always improving, though. Always improving is the point of the show. We want to be getting better every single week, including this podcast, including Magic the Gathering, including life. It's just that's what it's all about, man. It's just about doing little things better every day to just be better at what you're doing tomorrow. And this week, Trey, let's start with you. What did you do to improve at Magic the Gathering or life in general this week?
Well, Sunday, I did not intend to play Arena all day. And then I played Arena all day. I didn't do anything else but play Magic pretty much the entire day. I spent a lot of time playing the Aliantarazi 5-color Walkers deck and was impressed at the raw power of that deck. But I kept losing as a result of the mana. And then I came across, thanks to Mason, to a blue-white Walkers deck that's more of a prison-style deck and started playing that and realizing that it had a lot of the same benefits as the 5-color deck while having more consistency in the mana base and being a little bit easier. And then one of the things I saw as well is that some of the other people that were playing that deck, Zach Elskett and people that were talking about that the deck had some problems with Nexus. And it wasn't having a lot of effective ways to interact with Nexus outside of like Teferi Time Rattler. And there were comments in the Twitter feed talking about how like ways to try to solve that problem. And one of the things that I think that people were missing on, there was a lot of talk about Ixalan's Binding as a potential answer or something to do. And that seemed to be gaining some ground in the discussion on that. But I was thinking about it and how that's not a very effective plan against a deck whose primary win condition is a bounce spell that then just bounces your Ixalan's Bindings and turns everything back on. When they only need one turn to essentially win. And so instead I started to try to focus on testing with Demystify as a cheap way to interact and still be able to push your plan forward in a way that didn't play into their game plan as effectively.
Awesome. That's really cool. I got to play a lot against Simic Nexus this week as well. And it was really interesting because the deck that I was working on and will continue to work on this week was Big Red. If you're a member of the Patreon, then you've seen some of the work that myself have put in. And Henry got Mythic with the deck. Other people are now playing it. I've had a couple people message me. And one of the things that was the same problem, right? It's like, how do I deal with Nexus? And it was like, well, splash green for Cinder Vines. And having that thing come down, having whatever your answer be cheap enough that you can leave it up, essentially. You can just tax yourself one mana throughout the game and decide when to stop the Nexus, the Wilderness Circulation from happening, really helps a lot because they only have the 4 Growth Spiral. So it's not like they're getting ahead super early before they can start taking those turns. So I think Demystify makes a lot of sense in that deck.
Yeah, I agree. I've put that deck some too, and I'll talk about that here in just a minute. But yeah, I think Demystify is an entry answer. I think the other weird thing about Ixalan's Binding is it is 4 mana, and post-board they're going to bring in negates because you're a all non-creature spell deck. So you're kind of like walking to that a little harder when you spend 4 mana. And also your 4 mana and 3 mana and 5 mana turns, like that part of the curve is really taxed. Your deck has a lot of big drops in it. So it can be hard to do that. While Demystify, it's much easier to go like, I'm going to demystify your Wilderness Wreck and play Teferi Timebender in the same turn. And then if one of those gets countered, the other one's there to back it up, for example, or even a Narset. So I think that makes a lot of sense.
So, Trey, if I can ask, how do you get there? Like, if the listeners can learn from this moment for you where you realized that, you know, Ixalan's Binding might not be the answer you wanted, how can they apply that when they're trying to problem solve?
Well, and, you know, with that specifically, it was thinking about like, okay, yes, this would be a good answer, except thinking about what the win condition of the Nexus deck is and how then that's going to be playing into a bad situation. And so then it was thinking about, okay, well, what are the problems that you're having? Because you already have Sorcerer's Spyglass on the sideboard to deal with like a flipped Azcanta, or if they had any type of other Planeswalkers or anything else, if they were like the Bant version or something else. So you already have answers to those kind of things. And so the real issue that you don't have a way to effectively interact with is Nexus itself, which you can play things like Disdainful Stroke or Negate in order to interact with it you're already doing. And then the other part of the enchantments. And so what's the most effective and cost-effective way to try to interact with it? And so looking through that, remembering that Demystify is still legal in the format and looking at that as an option. And so it was just about like trying to identify what are the actual problems that you're trying to solve and then trying to look at what answers are available in order to do that.
Awesome. I think that's really, really helpful. I it's funny. I think that a lot of times we go through these moments as Magic players. And one of the things that I think that John and Michael, for what it's worth, were really good at is when they had these moments of improving, they were able to communicate how that moment happened and what steps it took and what logic they applied. And I think as we do the show together, we should all, like, this should be one of our goals together, is to get better at those moments and explaining how we came to those conclusions.
Well, and one of the things that I definitely had the benefit of is that I had played a considerable amount of the Nexus deck.
Yeah.
And so, like, thinking about, because my first reaction when I saw Ixalan's Binding as an answer was like, yeah, that's a great answer. If I, like, you get a Reclamation and then they can't cast any more Reclamations, it's like, great. And, like, blue-green doesn't have a lot of ways to interact with that. It's like, well, wait, they just play Kallus Dismissal. So all they have to do is just sit around and wait, and you don't put a lot of pressure on them as the Planeswalker deck. It's not like you're killing them quickly most of the time. And so they just get in, you can put yourself in a bad situation where you just get blown out.
Can I ask, does this make you guys think about playing something along the lines of White Weenie a little bit more when you think about like, okay, well, I can just play Teferi in my White Weenie deck. All of these decks are doing it right now. Mm-hmm. And then I just get Teferi into Mystify and Spell Pierce, and like I just have the best Nexus matchup, and then like decks are preparing for mono red, so like my large creatures are gonna, you know, give them a tough time. I don't know, that was just my thought while you were talking, Trey.
No, I do think that there's a lot of appeal to that deck right now, and certainly for a lot of those reasons, especially some of the builds that I've been seeing that are just playing like 4 Teferi Time Raveler main deck, and I think that there's a lot of value in that based on the way things are shaping up.
Yeah, I agree. I think mono white has a good mono red matchup, and if you're just mono white, you have like a passable ish Nexus matchup because you're so fast. And then when you're blue and you have the Time Ravelers, even if it's just a couple in the main deck, sometimes that's just like a spaghetti win. And then post board, you definitely have more Time Ravelers. You have Dovin's Veto now instead of Negate, so you win the counter war every time except Narset's Reversal, which they probably won't bring in against you unless they're really aware. of Dovin's Veto and Afraid of It. So I think it makes a lot of sense. That's one of the two decks on my short list for the MCQ I'm playing this weekend is Mono White. Well, Mono White Splash Blue.
Yeah, I think Matt Kling and Danny Cathro both have just locked into that deck. I'm in a chat with them talking about it. And, you know, they have the same list that I posted in the Patreon group. They're like, they're both testing it. They both say it's great. And that deck plays 4 Time Raveler, 2 Spell Pierce, and 4 Demystify. So, like,
and the Time Raveler is your main deck, right?
Yeah, 4 main deck Time Ravelers. Yep.
Yeah. And it also, like, I've heard some talk that, like, Time Raveler might not be the best, like, against some of the other matchups, like, in the abstract. But when you really get down to it, the Man of War draw card is, like, good enough a lot of the time in your main deck.
It probably helps the Gruul matchup a lot for what it's worth. And that matchup was bad for Mono White.
Yeah, a lot of times you would stick a bird and then stick some other threat, and those two would stop them. But when, like, you stick a bird and they're like, all right, I'll play Teferi plus 1 drop, unsummon bird, that is big game as someone who's played a lot of the Gruul deck.
Yeah, I would be afraid of that as the Gruul side. Anyway, Trey's always improving them. It turned into a conversation about White Weenie.
Well, I was going to say, I know Jessica Estefan tweeted that she said she was going to play Arena playing that deck that you posted and play until she lost. And she said she started at 8 and she stopped at like 2 a.m. So, I mean, that's like 6 hours of straight winning. I'm going to assume maybe she took a small bathroom break somewhere between then and that. So, you know.
I think that list is gas. I think that we didn't see very much Splash Blue at the SEG. I'll be interested to see what the PTQ results say.
100%. I agree with that. Spencer, what's your always favorite moment this week?
Oh, man. I was going to call on you.
I'm last, baby.
No, it's good. So, for me, I was celebrating in reverence of Star Wars Day. So I started Friday night and watched Star Wars all the way through the, you know, Saturday, outside of playing a PTQ. I had Star Wars on in the background while I was playing a PTQ. And I did something that old before being a dad Spencer would have done. I played 9 matches on Arena with this big red deck. And with some changes, and was just destroying people. And I was like, this deck is really good. And immediately went online, bought the deck on Magic Online, and registered for a PTQ. And I just wouldn't have done that a couple weeks back. And, you know, feeling the liberty to do that. And I started out 2-0, and then I lost round 3 due to a pretty horrendous misplay by me. There was an opposing Chandra. I had quite a bit of power in play, and I activated treasure maps to draw 2 cards. And the cards that I drew were Lava Coil, something else for the turn. And my opponent had 2 opposing Phoenixes in play. My opponent's Chandra was at 7, and I was like, "Oh, these are great! I'll just kill this. I'll attack, and then my opponent's dead next turn to this Banefire in my hand." Thinking in my head that the Chandra had already, like, achieved ultimate, there's nothing I could do about it. But as I passed the turn, I was like, well, that was stupid. Like, I could have sent 2 of this power at the Chandra and still had lethal next turn with this Banefire, and he wouldn't get to draw 7 cards. My opponent drew 13 cards that turn by ultimating Chandra, Rixmati Reveler, for a Carnival to kill me.
Wow, that's a lot
off
of cards.
Off of the last Rixmati Reveler. And it just doesn't happen if I take 1 second to slow down, attack the Chandra for 2, attack my opponent for 10, and then they just don't have an out. I just win the game and start out 3-0 at the PTQ, which is just a pretty good spot on online PTQs. There was one X2 that was going to make it, and it was just a bad misplay that I learned a lot from. The deck is very good. It's one of the decks that I'm considering for the MCQ, but it's one of those things where when you play a deck like Big Red, and there are lots of decks that are similar to this, where if you make a small misplay, it's usually really punishing because all your cards need to maximize their value in these decks. In like a traditional control deck, right, you have these tons of draw spells, tons of board wipes. You know, you can just counter the really obvious important stuff and then let the other stuff resolve and deal with it later. That's kind of not the case with control decks that aren't blue-based. You actually really have to think about your plays and get the most out of your cards. And as somebody who's been, you know, relying a lot on blue control decks recently, it's probably become a crutch for me to just bail myself out with you know, a big draw spell into Teferi. So it was nice to get punished for something that if I had just taken a little bit more time, I would have figured out, and I deserve that.
Sounds right. You know?
Yeah. I think that's something that's always important to remember. You know, I play a considerable amount of Grixis midrange, and that's a deck that does that in a very similar way. Like, if you miss sequence or you use your spells in the wrong way, like, you get punished so bad. Like, yeah. Really bad. And I think that playing decks like that can be very effective in, like, teaching you those lessons, right? Like, it makes you slow down and focus. And then if you're playing a deck that's not that way, you just get to, like, leverage that even more because you're thinking about your sequencing.
Yeah. I think it's also important to... I think if I were to, like, wrap a bow around this, it's that if you're going to play out the rest of the game, don't play it out in jest. Don't think, I've already lost, but I'm forced to play out the rest of this game, so I'm going to just play it out because that's what I'm supposed to do. You don't have to do that. You can concede. But because I chose to play out the entire game, I should play out the entire game and be an active participant throughout the whole thing and take the same amount of time to make my decisions that I would take during any other turns of the game if I thought I was in it. Because I was pretty unfavored until I drew Lava Coil off of these things. And, you know, I had accepted my loss in that round, but I actually would have won that had I just taken the time and been a part of the games, being part of that game, even though I thought I was supposed to lose. And, you know, just, you know, what does Pepe say? You know, never give up, trust your instincts. And that's just a good life lesson.
I don't know.
I have no idea what that is.
Yeah.
That's Star Fox 64. I'm so disappointed.
Wolf.
Wolf.
That's all I know.
That is Wolf. Wolf is from that game, Mason.
Oh.
Speaking of Mason, let's talk about your always improving moment, because you hit Mythic in, like, you know, really quickly.
I did hit Mythic pretty quickly. So the always improving moment kind of starts, it ends there, but it starts somewhere else. So I played an IQ on Saturday, and I picked Blue Green Fog, like we had kind of talked about last week on the show. And I played that, and I went undefeated, and I won the IQ. And then I got home, I kind of just relaxed, and on Sunday, I saw the Ben Reagan deck tech on the SCG for the Zach Elsick Ben Reagan Blue-White Super Friends deck, or Fibblethip and Friends deck, as Trey pointed out earlier. Fibblethip Friends. Sorry.
Nope.
Either way, I saw that deck, and I was like, oh, that looks pretty cool, I want to try it. You know, like, I don't know if this is going to be the best thing in the world, but I love Super Friend decks, so I'm going to try this. And so I just built the deck and hopped right into rank, and I started grinding with it, and I was doing pretty well. And even though I had like really great results with Fog the other day, instead of like switching back to Fog to grind, I was like, well, I'm just gonna grind this deck because I think this deck has potential, and I think it's going to adapt a little bit better to what's going on. And as I kept playing the deck, I realized how powerful it was, even with some of the changes that I tried, because I didn't like some of the things. I think some of my changes were wrong. I think some of them were a little bit better situationally for Arena. And I grinded a bunch with that deck, and I hit Mythic, and I technically lost 6 games, so when I got DC'd, but I only lost 5 matches of Magic on the way to Mythic from Diamond with no wins, playing the Super Friends deck the whole way. And I think that Super Friends deck is very real. If you haven't seen this deck, you can check out Zach Elsick on Twitter or me. Ben Reagan is the person who apparently originated the deck and sent it to Zach. I can't find Ben Reagan on Twitter, and no one tagged him all day, so I assume he doesn't have one. But either way, if he does have a Twitter and you find it, I'm sure he has it there as well. But either way, the deck is super strong. It plays about 17 or 19 Planeswalkers. I forget the exact number. Plays board wipes and just kind of runs the opponent over with repeatable card advantage. Just using Teferis, both of them. Using Dovin, the new one. Using Narset. Using Kasmina. And kind of just drowns the opponent in card advantage. And then has things like board wipes to catch back up against these creature decks. And it's surprisingly great.
It's really funny because this is like part of the appeal that was happening with the Big Red deck for me. It was like, oh, I get to just play all these super duper powerful Planeswalkers. And then I hadn't even thought about Tybalt yet, by the way, which, whoo, baby. You have all these things in play. They can't attack your one Planeswalker because, like, they have to work with this other Planeswalker. They actually just don't have enough resources to... Anyway, my point is it's not very often that these decks come together. And to have people hitting Mythic with, I think, 3 different versions, right? There's the 5-color version, a mono red version of a Super Friends deck and a blue white version of a Super Friends deck. There's like a lot of Planeswalker decks.
Yeah, for sure. And the blue white one even plays Mox Amber to try and get ahead and double spell earlier and double Walker. And once you get like a lot of the Walkers do a good job of protecting the other ones in that deck, minus really Narset. And once you get one going, they kind of start to snowball and becomes really hard for your opponent to ever beat it in creature combat. And then if you have all those board wipes too, so it kind of abysses the opponent. And I'm going to be honest, it's either that or mono white when it comes to me for the for the MCQ this weekend. I know I'm going to register Teferi Timebender, which is not what I thought, because if you listen to Evenaj, rest in peace, I was not high on Teferi Timebender. So,
yeah. One of the parts that I think is important to mention about this deck is it also plays Mobilized District, is the colorless man land.
The creature
that
land.
In this deck, you are often activating for one mana to make a 3/3 Vigilance, which is really critical to the success of this deck, which is also one of the reasons that Mox Amber is critical, because it is necessary a lot of the times to fix your mana, even though you're just a two-color deck, because you play Interplanar Beacon and Mobilized District. And so sometimes you actually need the true colored source that you get off of the Mox Amber being in play. But this deck reaches a point in the game where you could feel like you could almost take actions at random with no particular strategy and still not lose, because you get so far ahead. It's preposterous.
Yep, for sure. So my awesome. Whispering moment was not being tied to a deck that had good results. You know, like, I think it'd be very easy for me to be like, yeah, I just crushed this thing. I've been doing well in Arena. I'm just going to like plan to play Fog and work on my sideboard this week, but instead trying to find other decks.
One of my favorite things about Nexus, by the way, is how easy it is to attack. Like, if you want to beat Nexus FA decks, you just can. Like, that's just, you just get to play the cards that do it, and then you do it. Which is a pretty good place for, like, a degenerate deck to be.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we'll talk about that more in the power rankings here, too, so I don't want to go too deep there.
Yeah.
I agree with that statement.
Yeah. Should we talk? Go ahead, Trey.
I was just going to say one last thing. As far as looking between this deck and the five-color deck, that the primary thing that you get in the five-color deck that you miss in this is Command the Dreadhorde, which is the primary draw of being the five-color deck versus this, but that the mana consistency that you get in the blue-white version, I think, makes it worth sacrificing that power, and you often don't even miss it.
Yeah, for sure. I think Command the Dreadhorde is really cool, but I don't actually think it's good enough. It's just...
Awesome.
Yeah. There you go.
Let's move on to our Patreon question for the week. We have a question from Henry that says, how do you deal with anxiety between rounds? I can probably play 10 hours of Magic straight, but I hate waiting between rounds and it affects my tournament results. You know, what's funny is this came from a thread where, you know, I one of the things that I really try and do with our listeners is be vulnerable about the things that, like, I feel like I need to work on. And something that I really noticed at the Invitational a couple weeks ago, is that around like round six or so, I was done. I was like, this is the worst. I just want to be done. I want to go home. And there was a lot more Magic to play. Just like seven rounds more. And I think that it's really good for our patrons to be vulnerable in these same situations, because what it does is it allows us to talk about, you know, one, if we struggled with this, and two, what we've done if we have, or what we do that makes it so that we don't struggle with these things. And for me, I actually used to have this problem. I used to hate waiting between rounds. I was like all hyped up. I just want to play the next round. Let's go, let's go, let's go. And then the hype would fall down, and then I would be flat going into my next round. Mason likes that, by the way. He just wants the roller coaster.
Yeah.
But for me, like, what I've done is, you know, I specifically remember my last Grand Prix. I think it was my last Grand Prix. But it was a Grand Prix, I think, in Sacramento. And what happened was, you know, I got to make day two. It was a format that I, you know, practiced quite a bit of. And it was a limited format. And I could feel myself getting way too hyped up for day two. And I was like, whatever, let's just ride it. And I think I had gone quite a while without getting a pro point, like 5 or 6 months. And, you know, I really wanted to do that. Like, I just wanted to prove to myself that, like, I could still do that. And, you know, I was, oh man, it was my last one. It was last year. And so by the end, between rounds, as I started to find myself, you know, losing, I lost rounds 8 and 9. So the last, I believe those are the last 2 days on the sealed. And then I won one, lost, and kind of had to recoup and like get myself back into it. And what I did is I just rode the high and started listening to music between rounds. Sacramento's convention center, there's a, like, there's, you can just walk around it, and there's like shops on the outside of the convention center, like a 7-Eleven stuff. Went to the 7-Eleven, got a drink, just listening to music, kind of bobbing my head, and just writing my whatever emotion I was feeling. I just continued to feel it. I picked music that was going to emulate that emotion, and it worked out really well. And it's something that I started to do at other Magic tournaments since then. You know, I'm playing a lot more locally now, but I still do the same thing. I just put in my headphones and call it good, just to emulate the thing that I'm feeling, to keep my head in the zone. And it's kind of worked for me. I don't know if you guys have similar stories, but I was very happy to to run back that pro point, for what it's worth.
Trey, do you have anything
else? Yeah, so this is something I talked about in the thread, but, you know, going outside and walking around is something that I think is particularly important, particularly at a tournament hall. Is that getting out of the space where you are and not just sitting around and waiting and giving yourself that feeling of waiting, but just going and doing another activity. And that leaving and going and walking, going and get a drink, or going outside, like going and looking at the sky and not just the inside of a horrible convention center, and going away from like the, you know, the congregation of smokers that are there next to the closest door, and like walk around outside a little bit and come back in if you have time. I also will tend to play other games, not just playing more of Magic or whatever, but play other small games in between rounds in order to do that time. And one thing that I think kind of coincides with what Spencer was talking about when it comes to music, which I think is very useful and important, is recognizing that all of the different things that you might be feeling, whether that's anxiety or whether that's anger or whether that's, you know, depression or whatever it is that you go through, like during the times of a like Magic tournament, is that instead of thinking that there's some kind of normal that you have to get back to or normalize, that the, all of the things that you're experiencing going through are fine, and that those are, you know, reasonable emotions that you can be having, and that you can do things to like be in that moment and be in it, as opposed to feeling like that you're getting off course in some way, you know. And I'm not talking about like tilting off or something like that, but that like leaning into what it is that you're feeling and not feeling like you have to fight against what it is that's going on.
Yeah, so I liked everything that you said there, Trey. I think I agree with a lot of that. And for me, like when it comes to anxiety in between rounds, it's kind of weird. So like I struggle with anxiety, and part of what I do to handle that is I like accept it and embrace it, and I like reason through and process it, and I kind of talk to myself and like center myself, for a lack of a better word. You know, I talk through it, like, why are we feeling anxious? Why is this? What's the rationale for this, right? Is this something we should be feeling anxious about? And is anxiety going to help us? And then, as Spencer kind of alluded to, I'm also someone that's like, I like it when I'm the underdog. I like it when the chips are down. I like, on team tournaments, I like it when the match is down to me, you know? Maybe that's a product that that's just happened a lot, and like I've become conditioned to it in tournaments, but back in the Vanguard days, but I like it when the pressure's on me and it's up to me. And I can tell you, going in from the last SCG where we top forward, like we had two winning ends back to back, and on the first one I was like excited and pumped, and we lost. I'm like, all right, well, this is really the one, because we need to win this, and if we don't win this one, then we're playing for top 16, which is still a thing, but like, let's get that top 8, you know. And I like playing under that pressure. I know that that's different for other people, but embracing it and knowing yourself, I think, is super important in those kind of situations. So I don't know if that's helpful, Henry. I hope it was. I hope that like my weird psycho mind was maybe showed you a different way of looking at it, but hopefully one of the things we say can help you out.
I think I'd like to kind of add to what you said too, though.
Sure.
Because you know, you talk about liking the pressure being on you. Mm-hmm. And I think that if I can harken back to a previous coast, if that's okay, like I probably don't know a person that like gets more anxious than Michael Hinderaker. And I think Magic really helped him with that. He was able to just treat every match the same, you know, and we say that, but it's just not true, right? Like, not every match is the same. And I think that the reason that we say to do that is so that you don't let emotions dictate things. But, you know, I think that we would all be lying if our favorite matches weren't the ones that we were playing for the highest stakes. And I think realizing that, in addition to figuring out how to best curb that, is kind of the challenge here. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I would say also that maybe not even the highest stakes for me, but like when I got to play against Saito or Carvalho or Seth, which by the way, one scoreboard, CC hosts, you know, all the situations when I get to have like those moments, those are other moments where I'm super excited. Like moments where I actively know that the delta between us is huge. I love those moments. So that's another thing for me.
And I think the anxiety between rounds is because you've placed an importance on the next round.
Mm-hmm.
And you've placed an importance on how you do in the event, right? So if you remove those things that are these things, these arbitrary things that you've put importance around, and just be like, I'm just here to play Magic until I can't play Magic anymore, it kind of fixes that issue. And I think that if there's a, like, I think that there is an actual record in MTG for the most day twos of a Grand Prix in a row, and I think Michael Hinderaker literally holds it. And I think that's why he was able to do that, is because eventually he just removed himself from the round by round. He did, you know, he ate some granola, you know, asked Matt how he did, and then played his next round. And like, that was just what he did. And when we go to a Grand Prix that when we go to a Grand Prix or PTQ, and we only have so many shots at this thing that's really important to us, I think we place arbitrary importances on things that don't matter as much as we think they do.
Yeah. All the pressure is there because of you. There's no one else is saying you have to do these things. So just keep that in mind. Also, Magic and your results don't define you, which is something I'm sure we'll get to in the future and many times after that as well. So
yeah. Cool. Well, let's move on from our Patreon question to our sponsor, Oasis Games. And when we move on to them, we move on to them in style. So this week, Trey, what do we have from Oasis Games?
Hello, fellow Magic competitor. Are you no longer satisfied with just sparking joy? Instead, are you ready to send your joy meter straight to Chandra's ablaze? While everyone fumbles through the darkness of a new format, you will cut through the zombie army hordes like a red-hot knife through so much undead butter. So don't wait. Chain whirl your way over to see the good folks at Oasis Games. That's right. MTGOasis.com is the best place to rekindle your one true love of flame. You can try them out now with code CCMTG for 15% off your first order, and you can use code WouldThatBeGood for 4% off every other order. So make haste over to MTGOasis.com today. Tell them CCMTG sent you.
I don't know what I didn't know what this was going to be going in. We got custard, we got butter. I'm just saying, Trey, I don't know what your relationship is with Oasis Games right now, but it seems to be yellow liquid.
They butter Spencer right now.
Trying to butter them up, is that what you said?
No, they butter us up. We got all these cards from them recently, and it's just like, here we are.
No, I love our sponsor Oasis more than words can express. They're super amazing, and you know, that's not me trying to butter Alex up. I legitimately believe that. So
yeah, they rock the Mamba over there for sure.
Not a thing.
That's not a thing.
I didn't realize we diss our sponsors now. That's a weird neg. Are we like negging them to get more money, guys? Like, I can edit this part out if you need me to.
Oh my gosh. Let's move on to our main topic today. We're talking Power Rankings. It's week one of the format, guys. This is Overreaction Monday. I used to do an Overreaction Monday every format because every time I would call out the overreactions. This one would have been that Nexus needed to be banned. Just saying. You know,
I'd heard banned that. Tybalt before Nexus to send a message.
But let's talk. So I included, we have seven decks this time instead of five. And that's because we had some pretty close scores. So for those who don't know how the power rankings works, you get 6 points for first, 5 points for second, 4 points for top four, 3 for top 8, 2 for top 16, and top 32 and one for top 64 if available. And when I looked last, the MTGO PTQ results weren't available, so we're just using the SCG for this week. And for this, there was a pretty dominant deck, and we used to tell this story of this dominance a lot, and I'm excited to tell that story again. Before we get there, let's start with our number 7 deck. We have White Weenie, but weirdly enough, no blue splashes, if I'm not mistaken, at the SCG. There might have been one, but I don't think so.
And I think that might have impacted its performance slightly, too. I think that it might creep up in the rankings with that splash based on the way the meta game is shaking out.
I think so, too. When I looked at the results, I expected to see some Teferi Time Raveler White Weenie decks, and there were none.
Can I have a hot take?
Yeah, go for it.
So mm-hmm. I think a lot of the times, especially week one, people try to play it safe. And if they're playing a deck like White Weenie and a card like Teferi that's like a metagame call, they'll be scared too. Because like, but how many people really show up playing Nexus where these like tap out or these like control decks have a lot of instants that they need? And people are a little bit more afraid to pull the trigger on Teferi Time Raveler, where on Modo and Arena, there's not as much stakes on the line and they're willing to pull the trigger. They're like, I'm at home playing Magic. I'm going to play this Teferi Time Raveler. And so, and then they play with them like, oh, this is great. And then people in real life, I'm not sure that guy, that person's playing Arena, blah, 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 blah. And they justify it. And then the next weeks they come around and like, okay, I tried it at home. I was silly. I should have done this. So,
yeah, I've been trying to figure out where I rank ladder play, competitive event play on Arena versus other things, right? So, like, one of the things that I've learned in my time playing Magic the Gathering is like, leagues, I would probably equate league play to ranked play on Arena, for example. Ranked play on MTGO. But it's funny how things get crossed. Like, people want to discredit anything that they're not a part of. We actually had a thread a couple months ago, Mason, I don't remember this, on the Facebook group, where this person just talked about how everybody on Arena was trash and, like, Arena was garbage and, like, it would never succeed and MTGO was better and you should never play Arena because of how superior MTGO will always be for competitive play. And then, like, literally 2 months...
all 14 people in the constructed events this week showed us.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, no, as I say, and, like 2 months later, that same person posted that he was all in on Arena, competitive Magic. Like, do you remember this?
I vaguely – well, the problem is I had this conversation a lot, and so and we had it so much we even did a whole episode.
I'll give you a hint. This guy might not have paid somebody for a GP split.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that guy. Yeah, that guy was interesting.
It's really funny because I find myself caring about different things in Magic events and, like, how I rank things now compared to how I used to. And when I saw somebody get number one mythic with this White Weenie deck splashing this Teferi and then everybody talking about how great it was, I instantly was like, well, like, to get rank one on Arena, you have to win, like, 12 matches in a row at least.
Yeah, like, it's like top-ending a Grand Prix, right?
Like, yeah, like, exactly. It's like... Mm-hmm. So for me, like, that's a pretty big indicator. Way bigger than, like, a 5-0. That's just my opinion.
I think a 5-0 is still back in the heyday when there was only MTGO. I think that was equivalent to that, if that makes sense, or pretty close to it. Because
it was the equivalent to top aiming a GP.
No, well now let's bend these facts. What I mean is it's equivalent to like winning a bunch in a row on Arena because there is money on the line, so people would try a little harder. And sometimes not everyone's trying their hardest on Arena. So I do think that like it kind of weighs out to being equal ish there. But nowadays I'm kind of a little less high on MTGO results. Regardless, yes, when someone shows dominance on Arena, for me, that is good enough. Like, that's at least worth looking at a deck. Because even if a deck won an event for me, it's not like I'm going to play that deck without testing it. You know, once something shows results, I'm then like, okay, let's look at this.
All right, so let's talk really quickly because I want to talk about old man Magic for a second for me and Trey.
Oh, I'm glad Trey, to tune in.
When you saw... Law Rune Enforcer. Did you remember how good the Gideon Tapper was?
Oh yeah, it was great.
What was that card called? Just do you remember?
It wasn't Gideon's Lawkeeper. It was
Gideon's Homeboy.
Yeah, Gideon's Homeboy.
probably
Gideon Enforcer.
probably not that one. But that was the first thing that I thought of. That card was, I think it was a 1-1, right? That
no, you it, had is, to pay... it is Gideon's Lawkeeper.
Oh, it is Gideon's Lawkeeper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
1-1 human soldier, tap one and a white, tap target creature.
So this card did see standard play. I had forgotten that it saw like standard play because the, it was like the 4-man enchantment that built the Baneslayer Angel in that deck, I think is where it saw a little bit of play. but I did, when I saw this new Law Enforcer, are you seriously laughing that I said build a Baneslayer on the podcast?
I'm just like, wow, magic, 4 mana, well, build a Baneslayer.
Also, I'm really
this was like 7 years ago. This wasn't even that long ago.
I know, magic changed.
If I was still doing fake ads, I would have build a Baneslayer so fast. That would be next week's ad in an instant.
Wait, ads?
What? Yeah, you can build a Baneslayer at Oasis Games right now.
Yeah. What's the card called? Go there and buy them now. Use the code so we know we sent you. Spencer will sign one for you. Assign one of them for you.
Don't do that. I'm the only one that lives in Utah. I'll be the only one playing cards.
Exactly.
It's not fair.
Don't
do that.
Okay.
Yeah, so I did not expect Law Enforcer to be it's just seeing play on all of these white decks. It it makes sense. It's actually better in this deck than it would have been in these previous iterations, right? In this build a Baneslayer deck, because you have so many things that make your creature between Banalish Marshal, Veterated Loxodon. The deck that did the best at the SCG was playing Heroic Reinforcements. You can just use them for your Conclave Tribunals, for your Loxodon, your Veterated Loxodons. You just get a lot of value out of that derpy creature that you weren't typically getting in your aggro decks, and it makes it so I don't even worry about a lot of the time I don't have to worry about as much about the removal that I'm playing, because it will become a 2-power creature that attacks things anyway.
Yeah, it does all that, and it also like answers part of the Chain Whirler problem on a lot of fronts, right? It's a 1-drop you can play that doesn't just die to Chain Whirler, and then it taps down Chain Whirler, which can be a real problem sometimes
later in the game. Yeah.
Through. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a big addition to the deck that I didn't see coming. And we got through that conversation talking about Build a Baneslayer, so what is there any other big notices that you see from these decks? There was one version playing black for Duress out of the sideboard. I think that's just worse than playing Teferi, for the matchups that you would want that in. And I'm a pretty big fan of White Weenie going into this next week.
Yeah, and I think this is a key point of just like just where something performs in the previous week doesn't necessarily serve as an indication of what it will be going forward. You know, this is our bottom deck on the power rankings, but I think that this is something that's a very strong contender for being one of the top decks in the format.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you're looking to like metagame and stuff like that for like your MCQ or whatever event you're playing this weekend in standard, mono white, splash blue, or even just mono white, just the white decks make a lot of sense right now. They're very good against red decks. We'll get more into that later. They're good against the Nexus decks. They can put every deck to the test because they can curve out. Just makes a lot of sense.
Speaking of other decks, what's our number 6 deck?
Yeah, our number 6 deck is Gruul. And this is still on my short list for decks that I could possibly play at. It's also tied for what it's worth with Bant. But let's talk about Gruul first. This is also on my short list of decks that I'm still willing to play. And I want to talk about the list that got 22nd at the SCG from Wilson Freeman. So this deck plays 7 Planeswalkers in 3 Chandra, 3 Sarkhan, 1 Domari, and Argov Bolas. I'm pretty close to editing this deck list, finding room for Lana War Elves, cutting Chain Whirler, and just playing a Sarkhan Chandra Domari deck at this MCQ, guys. I think that Sarkhan, I did not register that this was basically Gideon Ally of Zendikar when I saw this card.
Like, whoa! Ally of Zendikar has been called.
It's like the closest comparison you can make for what it's worth.
Can we get make a 5-minute break? Sorry, continue. My heart got a little racy. I haven't felt love like that in a while.
it just comes down, makes a dragon, and then they're dead the next turn. It's like the same thing. It's like you make a token, and then my planeswalker, my token are going to kill you. Like, there was no other plays that were needed in this entire game because anything that was happened before this has become irrelevant, and now it's about these two things, which is what all that Gideon did.
First off, that you're true on a macro sense, and so I'm picking up what you're laying down.
Hey, I only have the comparisons that I can come up with, and when I thought about the ability to like make a token and then attack with the token of the planeswalker, that Gideon was the first thing that came to my mind.
No, I think like on a like a big picture that play pattern is very similar.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And so I see where you're coming from with that. It's fun though to jest about it a little bit. The Sarkhan has really impressed me. I've played some of the Gruul deck. I'm obviously pretty big fan of that deck. And the Sarkhan was really impressive, and I got to the point where I was down to just one Skurgan Hellkite and all my Hellkites becoming Sarkhans except for that.
Yeah,
and
me too.
And I think that card's passive ability gets slept on a little bit. The fact that Dragon's Ping is super important in some of the matchups. Like, the White Weenie matchup becomes almost unlosable. At that point, between Chain Whirler and that in your deck, you just have so many things that make it so creatures can't attack into you. That I think the deck's good. I think it puts people to the test. And I think Anarcha Bolas fits a weird role in the deck, but also makes Sarkhan better. So it's a weird deck.
Mason, I'm going to say something that's going to blow your mind.
Okay? You did it a second ago, so I believe you.
Yeah, I'm not done. I'm not done blowing your mind, baby.
Is this a two for one?
I literally was texting. I don't know if – was it you or was it Matt that I was like, I'm probably just going to cut 4-mana Dahmer from this deck and play Chandra instead, because I would rather play more in Planeswalkers, which means I'm playing a little bit less creatures, making Dahmer worse. And Chandra basically does the same thing by dealing the damage that the haste would give my – the haste and the +1/+1 counters dealing damage anyway, while also letting – you know, being a reasonable planeswalker for my Sarkhan. So this 22nd place list makes a lot of sense to me. I think it's like two or three cards off in the main deck from what I would play.
Yeah, you mentioned maybe cutting Chain Whirler. I would be hesitant to do that personally.
Oh, no, if I was playing the red version, I would play Chain Whirler. Okay. I'm there was a Paradise Druid version of this deck that had three of them that I want to try out.
Okay.
But I think that one of the really big benefits of the Chain Whirler versions of the deck is you're really good against opposing Chain Whirlers. So when you add Paradise Druid and Land War Elves to your deck, that becomes less true. So I'll probably try out a red version first.
Yeah. One thing I really like about Chandra too is that like it's easier to cast. Your deck only has like 10 actual green sources. So every now and again, Domri 4 would get stuck in your hand, and Chandra just doesn't have that problem. It's like impossible to not cast Chandra. You get very unlucky, so.
I like this deck a lot. This is on my short list. Let's talk about the next deck really quick, though. Unless, Trey, do you have anything to say on Gruul?
No.
It's like, Trey, no, I don't believe in Gruul cards. Primeval Titans of Sin. So I want to talk about the sixth place list from Harlan. Is it Fire? Fire?
It's Harlan Fear.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's a great name. So I've played against this deck a ton already. This deck is very popular on Arena right now. And I want to talk about a sweet play that my opponent did. I did end up beating them, but I got pretty lucky to do it. I was playing mono red aggro, and they had a Teferi in play, and then they played a Knight of Autumn.
Teferi 3?
Yeah, the 3 mana Teferi. They played a Knight of Autumn, bounced their Knight of Autumn, drew a card, played their Knight of Autumn. And I was like, had this shock in my hand. I was like, this is so stupid. If they actually hadn't played the Knight of Autumn again, and waited a turn, I think they would have won, because they could have bounced it and done it like a couple more times by never showing their Knight of Autumn to a shock that was in my hand during my turn. And I was like, oh man, that's like a crazy next level play against mono red deck, because they can't leave mana up against you anymore. Once your Teferi's in play for their burn spells, they have to use them during their turn. And that really protects Knight of Autumn and just makes it this like repeatable life gain effect with a Teferi in play. Anyway, I thought that was really sweet, and it made me like this deck somehow for some reason way more. But also, it's a 4 of Frilled Mystic deck, so I was already in.
Yeah, so that was what I was gonna say is I think this deck appeals to a lot of people, and that's what you see in Arena. You have to do sweet plays like that. Like my opponent in the IQ round one had a Teferi in play. I like cast a Chemist as my main phase. He Frilled Mystics, counters, attacks me, and then bounces it back with his own Teferi. And I'm like, yeah! Tough guy over here with all his counter spells. You know, can't win ever. Lost
Come
that
on,
game.
That was that's gas. That's just like the best time you could have.
Yeah, and I think that's why we see it played so much, because it's a lot of fun. And you get to do a lot of cool things like that.
Yeah,
I'm hearing a butt. Do you have a
No,
vibe?
This deck is super fun. And it's a thing that, like, for those of you that don't know, last Standard on week one, I played a Bant midrange deck that had a lot of the similar cards in it at SCG Indy. And this deck is just a clear upgrade over that, thanks to primarily Teferi and Vivian Reed. Like, the fact that you can play Vivian, get card advantage, and give all of your creatures flash.
You mean, like, Champion of the Wilds, right?
What's that? Yeah, not Vivian Reed, but yeah, Vivian, Champion of the Wilds. Yeah. The three mana Vivian.
It's always weird when the first Planeswalker is this, like, the surname or whatever, and then you're like, yeah, right. Referring to the card. It's like, no, that is a card. Continue. Sorry, I that's one thing that always gets me.
Yeah, Vivian, Champion of the Wilds. The three mana Vivian that gives all your creatures flash. Like, I think that's really big game, and it really, like, is what is the glue that, like, puts this deck together and lets you do all of this nonsense and everything else in a really effective way. Like, getting, like, instant speed Deputy of Detention. Like,
instant speed Hydroid Crisis, baby. Like, let's go.
Yeah. Instant speed Oketra. Don't sleep on it.
Yeah, for sure. There's, like, lots of really, like, great stuff, especially, like, once you have Oketra in play and you're, like, instant speed playing stuff and making 4/4s at the same time. Like, you just can make combat method miserable for your opponent. I did have an opponent today, though, do a not-so-sweet play, which is I was sacrificing my Blast Zone on 3 to kill their Vivian, and they flashed in a Deputy of Detention in response, which was not the strongest play.
Can Deputy target your own stuff?
No.
That would have been sick, though.
That would have been sick. But no, they targeted my Planeswalker and reset its loyalty from 1 back to full, which I did appreciate.
That's a homie move.
Yeah, it was very nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. This deck is sweet. I have been shocked at how good Vivian was in this deck. I saw Vivian and I thought that she was going to be kind of like, you know, she was going to be okay. These Planeswalkers are just better than I expected. I think that's true of Planeswalkers a lot. So I don't know why I expected in a set with, like, you know, 3 million Planeswalkers that I wouldn't be wrong about more than half of them, because I'm always wrong about more than half of them.
Yeah. So I have a question. We've all used the word sweet, and we all know what sweet means in Magic. I mean, that's really cool, but you'll never see me playing it. Does anyone here, like, not mean that? I'm just curious. Because
I will try this deck.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I will try to shove Biogenic Oozes in it, as you know, but that's always going to be a deal. Because that's just something that I think is a lot of fun, particularly with Frilled Mystic, is that if you create, like, that tension point where, like, you have creatures that have flash, you have Frilled Mystics, and now you have Oozes that you can also activate, like, it becomes, like, nightmarish for your opponent to try to make decisions about what to play against.
What do you think the percentage of games human beings that have cast and countered a spell with Frilled Mystic have lost are?
From my experience, not many. Like, you cast Frilled Mystic and counter a spell, you win the game.
Yeah, I might have beaten it, like, 3 or 4 times total.
Here's the thing that's most frustrating about Frilled Mystic is if you're playing against it, like, it's the most obvious counterspell that exists. Like, your opponent's just passing the turn every turn with 4 mana up. You're like, okay, I get it. Like, you have Frilled Mystic. And then there's still sometimes where you're like, well, I just can't beat it. Like, I know that you have it, and it doesn't matter. Like, that I want to do something about it, but I can't.
Yeah, I think that's also one of the strengths of Vivian, is kind of what you're saying, right? Is Vivian in this deck masks the Frilled Mystic and helps find Frilled Mystic, right? The minus lets you go find a Frilled Mystic. And then it's like, I mean, they probably have Frilled Mystic, but also they could just have that Deputy Detention right now. So I've got to do something, you know? So I think the deck's probably pretty good. I'm curious. I think it's a deck you probably want to change some cards in every week if possible. Like, I know, excuse me, I'm so sorry. Jonathan Hobbs played 1 Settle in his main deck. And that's, like, some pretty big points, right? It's like, well, they'd be holding up all these creatures, but whatever, we're going to attack, and then, boom, settle the Wreckage you. So I'm curious to see how this deck evolves and stuff, and I want to play a deck like this. I just, I don't know. I got some doubts right now.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I think the deck is sweet. I appreciate it. It's Team Nova, right, that innovated this. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, shout out to them. If I'm not mistaken, our favorite Taco Bell lover is on that team, right?
Allie Warfield is on Team Nova. My favorite Taco Bell lover is myself, because I love myself. But
I didn't know I've fallen so far in your Taco Bell power ranking.
I don't love. I mean, Taco. Yeah, we won't get into that. Let's talk about something that we can talk about, though, which is Esper midrange. This deck comes in.
It's next. To the point now that every time you say Taco Bell, I think all I hear is Taco Bell. Let's Taco Bell. Let's Taco Bell. Let's Taco Bell.
Baja Blast, am I right? That's what this episode is.
I don't drink soda anymore, man. Like,
that's
I
your just, mid-range.
Yeah, but I do think that. So I was texting Danny. This deck, by the way, it comes in with 12 points. So it's a good jump in the point totals.
Isn't this like about where he landed the last time too in the first open weekend when Wyatt Darby played it?
I just think, yeah. I'm just going to say this. I don't care how many cards this deck gets.
Wow.
I'm going to have a hard time believing that this deck is good until it just smacks me in the face a couple times. Not that I'm saying that it can't ever be good. You know, Enter the Eternal Gods is great. Liliana is great. Teferi is great. Sorin is a huge get for this deck. It got a lot. But I still haven't lost to it.
Yeah. This deck always feels like you're really setting yourself up to jump through a lot of hoops to get 1/1s. Like,
yeah.
it's working so it's like, hard to make Hero of Precinct 1 good.
Yeah, the crazy thing is, it's like, you play Hero of Precinct 1, and you're tapped out, and then I kill your hero, and you're like, well, I guess I'm going to play this Thought Erasure. And, like, so often, like, the best thing about Thought Erasure, for me, as a 2-mana discard spell, is taking them off their 3 and 4-mana plays. They're 2, they're 3, they're 4-mana plays, right? That mid-game. And the problem is that when you wait to do it till turn 3, I probably have multiple in my hand at that point that I can just play. And you gloss that value of making me take a turn off with your 2-mana discard spell. Like, we've all, like, I don't know about you guys. Do you guys not agree that turn 2 Thought Erasure is the best Thought Erasure?
Oh, for sure. You know, and that may actually just be a sequencing play problem from your opponents of, like not taking that play just so they can try to get a 1-1, right? Because the incentive is there to do it.
That's my point. It's like, yeah. I don't know. Go ahead.
I think that's not a deck building mistake necessarily. Like, to be fair to this deck, I think that's a sequencing problem from your opponents. Like,
the deck encourages that sequencing problem.
Well, we're seeing this thing as like, well, it's tempting you to, right? Because you need to know, like, the card and stuff like that too, right? Because, like, let's say your opponent's mono red, you might be more incentivized to play a Thought Eraser if, like, on turn 3, because sure. Chandra or Experimental Frenzy is a bigger problem, so you actually want to give them the extra turn. Where sure, against another true. Deck, you might want a Thought Eraser early. And I think what happens is people like to fall in heuristics, and they're like, in this deck, I go Thought Eraser, I go Hero Precinct on 2, because if I play my Thought Eraser, it's better on turn 3, which is not always right. I also think it's telling that the two times I've seen this deck do really well is week 1 in the hands of a Platinum Pro. I've seen Wyatt Darby win with it, and I've seen BBD win with it. And
dude, this deck had a lot of finishes, though.
It did, but like, do you see what I'm saying, though? Like, the didn't BBD do the best with it this weekend? By the way, I love BBD's version of the deck. I think it's much better than the old one. Having actual powerful endgame cards, I think, is a real upgrade to this deck. I think this deck had, like, a mopey midrange deck. It was a super mopey midrange deck before that really leaned on the power of sideboard and picking your opponent apart, which is also kind of telling that pros are really good at that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So in the top 25, which is what it was on Goldfish, it took 10th and 11th, which is 4 points. So it got... it got 8 points elsewhere.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, so I'm not saying that, like, no one else can really play these decks. I'm just saying I think it's a little telling that it's in the early weeks where, like, discard spells and these kind of things are more powerful, right, because decks aren't as tuned, and it has a very proactive game plan. Like, the game plan of, like, Thought Erasure, Thief of Sanity, Hero Precinct 1 plus removal spell is a pretty good plan against a deck that isn't quite fully formed. Also, I think this deck is really good against Nexus of Fate. And so yeah. I think it makes a lot of sense to play. And I bet a lot of those points got earned by beating Nexus of Fate. So, I don't know for sure, but...
It's hard for me to get behind the Hero Precinct 1 plan. Because, like, at the end of the last format, we just saw Thief of Sanity, Hostage Taker, you know... let's be real. If this deck just didn't play Hero of Precinct 1 and, like, just played different cards in that slot, I don't know. I just think that the card is a trap, and maybe there are better ways to build it. I don't know.
Yeah, I would say that
I'm probably wrong.
I think Esper Control is probably better, because post board you get a lot of the same things that are, like, just as good. Like, if you look at Zach Allen's fourth place deck list and his sideboard, he has
three Thief of Sanity, and he has one Enter the God Eternals, and I believe that's it when it comes. I guess the Fairy Time Reveler is a card that the newer Esper midrange decks play, and he gets to kind of play that similar game plan by having this better go over the top game one plan that also beats up on the aggressive decks more. And while his like Nexus matchup is a little worse, he is a lot better versus a lot of the other decks. And I think that if you're like, if you're the person that says, I don't want to lose to I don't want to lose to Nexus, then Esper midrange might be the deck for you. And if you're like, I want to have a more rounded approach, I think Esper control is better, and that should probably be the deck you choose.
All right. Well, so to avoid me talking crap on a deck that people love, let's go on to the next deck.
Nexus of Fate.
Yeah, we have Nexus of Fate expert, Mason, is it Clark on the podcast?
Yikes, expert's a strong word.
I refuse to agree to those terms.
I played an IQ dude, and I just beat people. I don't know if I'm an expert. I did beat this one guy in round three, though, Trey McClernand. That guy, man, that was free money. But besides that, you know, a lot of my games were competitive that weekend. No, I think Nexus was a great week one deck. And I think it's already, I think it's telling, right? And they kind of told this narrative on SCG, and I think it's 100% true. And I was kind of thinking of it myself, where it's like, this SCG was stacked in the top eight. I mean, like, if someone wants to pull up and read off the names, there are a lot of really good names that you hear all the time on not only the SCG tour, but also just like at GP sometimes too as well. And those people came prepared for Nexus. And while Dylan Hand did lose a really close one to Edgar Malgenhaynes, I believe is how that last name is pronounced. Sorry, Edgar, if that's not correct. Either way, you know, the Nexus decks just didn't convert because these really good players came prepared to beat Nexus. So I think Nexus is a real deck, but when there's too much hate because everyone knows you're the number one dog, I don't think you can perform as well. And that's why I think I had an easier time at a local IQ where people aren't prepared. And then Nexus was the most conversion rate, the most converted deck from day one to two at the SCG, and then failed to put up a top eight.
Just to speak to what you just said, Edgar might be the best player on the SCG tour. I'm going to say his name wrong. It's Harlan Fier.
Harlan Fier.
Has multiple SCG top eights. Zachary Keenan has multiple SCG top eights. Zach Allen has multiple SCG top eights. Ethan Galaski has multiple SCG top eights. Collins Mullen has multiple SCG open top eights. Will Pulliam has tons of SCG top eights. Like,
and two wins now, yeah. And Zach Allen has back-to-back SCG top eights.
I agree. I think that the top eight is certainly stacked.
And this, and I just want to say, so like, let's say you're out there and you played an IQ this weekend or something like that, and you lost a Nexus, and it's like, how can I beat Nexus? I think this is a moment where you can look at these decklists and be like, these players came prepared. Everyone in that top eight knew Nexus was the default deck to play, right? We're like the most powerful deck. And I think that narrative was true, and people aren't prepared for Nexus. It's really, really good. But people were prepared because that had happened. These players were, and they got rewarded for that. So Nexus is beatable.
Like, the fact that no one had a realization about Nexus that I'd never really thought about in these terms. I think that Nexus might be the dredge of Standard.
Like, I'm willing to go down this rabbit hole.
Genuinely, right? Like, Nexus is a very consistent deck that, like, has a very linear game plan, right? Like, it does the same thing over and over and over again every time. It's difficult to interact with by playing these spells and permanents that are tough to deal with, and they're difficult for most decks to interact with. And that if you come in without a plan for it, you will lose to it. And it wins most of its game ones, and then, the board is where the games really matter. And then if you come prepared with a plan for it, if people have it on their radar and they're really like gunning for it, then it's going to have poor performances in those tournaments because you can attack that linear game plan if you come with the tools to do so. But, you have to then shave points in other matchups if you're really like heavily loading, for that particular match. But if you want to beat it, you can beat it. And if you don't, you'll lose to it. Like, I think it's very similar in the way it plays out tournament wise to the way Dredge plays out in Modern.
Mm-hmm. Can we take it just a second to just the, I like it when the community gets a card perfectly correct. I was texting Matt Kling this week, and I said, Cameo Collector of Tales literally reads as though it was built to be played in Simic Nexus. Like, what in the world? It gets back up your fogs. It grabs your nexuses. It makes it so they can't target you with their discard. Like, who invented, who Who signed off on this?
Yeah, you know what I love about that card, though, is even though it is, like, custom built for that deck, that card is super hard to play with. Like, Tamiyo is, like, extremely skill testing on every turn because it does so many things.
Yeah. I had an opponent multiple times plus his Tamiyo when his only out in his deck was Blast Zone, and then milled his Blast Zones, or their Blast Zones, I'm sorry. Which was, I was like, oh man, I can't believe they're milling their own Blast Zones here. With if they had just minus to get back Fogs, they probably had enough turns to actually get to draw Blast Zone.
Yeah, so, yeah, and it's also an interesting thing too, right? Where like you like almost want to name something that buys you time so that you can minus to get back the Blast Zone, because you're kind of hoping to hit two things at that point, right? Because you can't name lands, and that's something I experienced with that deck where. Until it gets to the point where it doesn't really matter. At a certain point, Nexus kind of reached this inevitability state because Tamiyo puts everything that isn't Nexus of Fate into your graveyard so quickly, and then you just buy back the one you need after you build up a couple extra turns. But in the early turns, naming things can be pretty hard. You know, I was like under the gun from a Cinder Vines, and it's like, well, I don't really want to name Reclamation. I don't really want to name Nexus because of this, so I'm going to name my one of, you know, Blink of an Eye right now. Just to try and get this Cinder Vines off the battlefield. And so I was basically trying to play to a one of while also milling towards those things for later. So you can it's a really skill testing card. It's really awesome. I can't wait to play with it in decks that aren't Nexus of Fate in the future. And I can't wait to play with it in Nexus of Fate because I do love that card a lot.
Yeah, I mostly am okay with this deck being a good deck in Standard. I know a lot of people hate it. I know a lot of people get bullied at FNMs for playing it. And I would just encourage people to like, you know, come with a game plan for it and beat it instead, because it's a pretty easy deck to beat when you want to.
I got bullied at the IQ and I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah,
my opponents are like making fun of me for like playing really skill testing Magic there, and I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't hear you, I got these SUG points coming, you know. Like
I would be like, sorry, I can't hear you all over all that winning.
Yeah, match points really clog up my ears, and I business is booming. My ears are stuffed, so I'll talk to you later.
And so the next deck on the list is Nexus, and then the next deck on the list is Nexus, and the next deck on the list is Nexus.
No! No!
So coming in at third place with 16 points.
I hate you guys. You guys are so meme-y.
What's
that mean? Yeah, that's a good question. 19 points, though. We have Esper Control coming in. I am sad. I don't want Esper Control to be the control deck that sees play in Standard. And I think that the reason that it sees play is because Thought Erasure is so good. Like, I've just come to the conclusion that that is the reason that Esper is good.
Can I hop in real quick? Earlier you said turn 2 Thought Eraser is the best, and I shake my head no, because people at home couldn't see that. Take up your Teferi, draw step Thought Eraser is the best. Actual nothing you can do. It's infuriating. I feel like my fate is taken from me. That is the best Thought Eraser.
But
I have not played Thought Eraser with a plus Teferi yet, so I can see where how you would feel that way.
Oh, it's dope. It's super dope.
I guess it depends on where you stand.
Also, you're expressing shade at Esper Control. I kind of thought that Shaheen Serrani might like summon here immediately in order to take you to task. Like,
no, I think he has an alert set.
Yeah. If anyone says anything bad about Esper.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that I think the deck is bad. It's just not the style of this is just not the style of control that I typically enjoy playing. You know, I like my three color control decks to have a Crackling Drake that kills my opponent quickly, or a 5/6 flash that draws me two cards or counters a spell that kills it. Like these things, this just takes too long for me.
You mean these newfangled control decks with win conditions? Not into it. Old fashioned controls did nothing forever.
I think that's just doesn't like with this deck, right?
I don't want to do nothing. I don't have that much time on my hands, straight. Like,
no, it's the best.
I do. The thing is that when you ultimate Teferi and Blue Eye Control from two seasons ago, you had the time twister in your deck. So like you just instantly were going to win, right? You draw 7 cards, exile 7 lands. They actually can't win the game. There's
you're
no
talking
reason.
About memory.
Yeah.
I was
that's
like,
the
what
one.
Are you talking about?
Yeah. These decks don't have that. So first of all, ultimating your Teferi is like something you actually have to think about. You can't just do it. And then second of all, you know, after you do it, you just gotta wait for a really long time to win.
Love it. Can't wait.
Great.
As someone who's just been looping Nexus recently, can't wait to take all the turns, pass back to you, ask about your day, exile your land, draw for turn, trigger.
Yeah.
I think this deck is really good, and I'm curious to see if Oath of Kaya sees more play, because I think Oath of Kaya is really good against red, and I think if that deck's, spoilers, the next deck on the list, I think you might want to play some more Oath of Kaya, so I'm excited to see how this goes. And also, I wonder if Kaya comes back, because OG Kaya is still good.
Deck that I think got a lot of pieces as well. Talking about like decks that like seemingly had cards built for it. Like this deck seems like it had cards just custom built for it. And it almost hasn't gotten as much hype for it because people are bored by how like consistent and good it is. Like everyone's trying to find new and fun things to do. And Esper Control is just like, nah, we're still just great. But we got all these new tools that make it just better.
Yeah, Tyrant Scorn is one that I think flew in the radar under the radar a little bit for specifically control decks, and it seems pretty good.
Yeah, card's good.
Yeah, that card's great.
It's good in the blue-black midrange deck too, the VTCLA deck.
Yeah. Do you guys have any concerns? I have recently started playing Tibalt in my sideboards against this deck, and it's been huge game for me, and that makes me worry a little bit. For Esper Control.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Like, Tibalt taxes your Wrath of Contempt, so if you don't have Oath of Kaya, that's, like, really the only way you interact with that card outside of maybe some Basilica Bellhaunt you have post-board, but even then, like, that means your Bellhaunt was discard a card for a 4-mana 3-4. So, or make them discard a card, not you actually discard a card. So, yeah, I think Tibalt's really good against Esper Control. I think it does a lot for that matchup. And it taxes them in a different way, which I think is really good. Like, one thing that we saw Will Palm talk about is he played Chandra over Experimental Frenzy because Esper Control has Mortify. And they only have Wrath of Contempt to answer these Planeswalkers for the most part. And it's a Fairy Minus. So when you get to stake more of these Planeswalkers, you really tax them. And you're still doing your main game plan so much that I think Tibalt is just a smart addition. I think that card also makes that matchup much better, which is... yikes if you're the Esper player, because that's part of the reason to play Esper is that you were so much better against Mono Red than Jeskai was, because you had all that incidental life gain. Maybe that life gain doesn't matter anymore.
You know what's really funny is I'm not just playing it in Mono Red aggro. Like, I want my Tibalts in my Gruul aggro decks. I want my Tibalts. It legitimately has made me want Banefire again.
Yeah,
and like, go ahead.
I was just going to say, in decks where you're applying pressure, Tibalt's very good. Mono Red's just kind of like the default one. But yeah, I agree with what you're saying. And it does make Banefire... a actual card again.
Yeah.
Can we at least acknowledge that we've all just said that Tibalt is very good, and how astonishing that is?
I'd
say, like, good for you, Tibalt. You did it. You know,
you did the thing, man. You did the thing.
Also, people who read
that haircut finally worked out.
People read that Tibalt, and I saw people saying like, this is not playable again. Can't they give him a good card? And like, have you all ever played against Esper Control with a mono red deck? They always win it like 4 life after playing 4 absorbs. It's just like, I just need one. I just need to counter one, I'm going to win. So, Tibalt's great. That card's insane.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that. I appreciate Zach back-to-back Esper top 8s, though. Shout out to Zach.
Yeah, that's different formats, too. You know, I saw him joking on Twitter that, like, Teferi, the Hero of Dominaria foil, was the best investment of his life because he plays it every weekend and he leads all these top 8s.
So. Yeah. I'm a pretty big fan of control in this format. I think that Esper's the best version. Well, you know, you hear me sad that it is Esper over something like Jeskai or straight blue-white. That doesn't mean that I don't see the power in these decks. I think that, you know, Tyrant Scorn is a huge upgrade. I think sideboard Teferi Time Raveler or even main deck, depending on how you want to build your deck, is like a huge game. I don't know. This deck, kind of like Trey said, it just got a lot.
And Narset. We haven't got to talk about Narset yet, but Narset's been really impressive and also a card I've seen in sideboards of the Esper deck.
Yeah, it looks like their 11th place deck and Zach's deck both main decked it.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. So Narset's someone that, you know, people kind of slept on during spoiler season 2.
It's very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned Oath of Kaya. So before we move on, I just want you to talk about that. The card was... it was $4 spoiled and is only 90 cents now. So I'm interested to hear, you know, your love for that card is contradicting the pattern for it.
Sure. Well, sure. So there's like, I think there's a couple things around there. One,
things get really hyped up in the cards compared to Lightning Helix, you know, and they're like, this is the Lightning Helix of the new standard. And it's like, well, 3 and 2 mana is a big difference. But basically, my thought process is to maybe why you want to play more Lightning Helix. I'm sorry, play more Oath of Kaia's over Moment of Cravings. It is simply that Moment of Craving is like very good and answer things on curve, but the life gain matters a lot there, I think. And your opponent really needs to attack your Planeswalker, so the incidental life gain can come up a lot more, I think. And while you are losing one of your two drops, I'm not saying like play 4 Oath of Kaia's. I'm saying like play, you know, 1 or 2. It synergizes well with your Teferi. You can Oath of Kaia kill something, play a Teferi, bounce your Oath of Kaia, draw a card, replay it, kill another thing, gain another 3 life. It's just very good at like picking apart the board and buying you enough time.
Additionally, like, it can't be slept on the fact that Oath of Kaia can hit Planeswalkers. Yeah. Like, you know, you're talking about in Gruul how you're wanting to play more Planeswalkers. We're talking about this Bant deck that has these Planeswalkers that really incentivize the deck. You know, and the always improving Mason and I were talking about this blue-white Planeswalker deck. And you, like, you have to have ways to interact with these things more than just Vraska's Contempt. And especially all of these ones that just, like, you play and tick down. Like, let's say it's the Mirror even, and your opponent just plays Narset and ticks down, and then you can play Oath of Kaia and kill it. Like, get it off the board, and then you can draw your cards. Like, it does a lot of effective things in that way.
Can I just say that the Mythic Championship should have been the standard format? Like, I can't believe this Mythic Championship wasn't a pre-release for standard. Like, it would have been so sweet. I don't think that anybody, when they announced we're going to have 32 Planeswalkers in standard, 32 new, or 36, I don't remember what 36. I was going to let you talk about your bet, but clearly you didn't want to.
The people know. The people who need to know know.
I don't know that any of us expected. I mean, I certainly didn't expect 13 playable Planeswalkers.
I knew there would be some good ones, and some of these, you know, have been more surprising than others. Like, I will say that Dovin, Hand of the Control, has played out really well. Like, it could be a card that if you wanted to play in your more black-white, your Esper, or even more blue-white control decks that don't rely on so many Planeswalkers, it forces people to overextend, and it's at least serviceable in the mirrors because it makes counterspells cost more, so you're up in mana in those battles, and those matter a lot. So
yeah, if you're playing a deck that plays sweepers, Dovin is awesome, because your opponent just has to play more stuff in order to try to kill it.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of these Planeswalkers are pretty good. I think we've pretty quickly identified the ones that aren't going to see a whole lot of play, but even then, they have a lot of really interesting effects. They're just really powerful. I wouldn't be surprised if every single one of these Planeswalkers makes a top 8 appearance at some point during their life. Like, they can all just do that. Even Samut.
Even Samut?
Even Samut.
Even Samut?
Even Samut.
And next up, with 29 points, 10 points more than the second place deck, we have Mono Red Aggro. And typically, throughout history on the power rankings, you know, a lot of weak ones were dominated by Mono Red for years and years and years and years. And a lot of people are like, it's because people aren't prepared for it. And I just don't think that's true this week. Like, I think Mono Red is just really good.
It's just extremely efficient and has, like, all of its spells do the same thing. It either, like, does a lot of damage or draws a bunch of cards or draws a bunch of cards and does a lot of damage for no reason.
One thing that I've noticed with this Mono Red deck, and I've played it a little bit of last season for like a week or two and kind of grinded up to Mythic with it for the most part, is that you're playing a lot of real cards. Like, you have some cards that aren't real, like Fanatical Firebrand, Get Ulava, Runner, Sheena Pyromancer. Those aren't the best cards in the world, but like Chain Whirler, Lie at the Stage, Risk Factor, Experiment of Frenzy, Now Chandra, Tybalt. You have so many real cards in this deck. Like, your cards are just good cards. Hold on.
I need a call. Did you just say Gitu Lava Runner is not a real Magic card?
It's, like, pretty good, but it's, like, nowhere near as powerful as the other cards.
It, like, completely warped the Pauper format for, like, a week and or, like, a month.
What does that even mean?
Nothing.
Like, wait, what? It's like a substantially more powerful format than Standard.
I mean, how about the fact that it's just, like, the deck plays like almost more lightning bolts than it can play. Like, yeah, there are so many like standard legal lightning bolts that you just get to play all of them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the real thing. Like, the deck is like a real deal burn deck.
Yeah. Skewer the Critics just looks silly. Like, why would you? I don't think I've seen a list play 4 of those in like over a month. Like, it's just not good enough.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying too, right? Is like they have all these premium cards that you would normally get to play, and they can go long. It like has card advantage. And sometimes it plays this like this lightning fast red deck, and sometimes it plays like a grindy, almost like a big red deck at times, right? Like you play your Chandra and you tick up a bunch and you work towards the ultimate and you protect it. Like we saw Will Pullum do that on coverage. I've seen people do it on Arena. This deck is like just a very good deck and very real. And I also think that the adage of like people are trying new things is really true on day ones, and Red gets some free wins there. But then also, I think the deck is just really well positioned this weekend. I think it was a great pick for this open. I think it's a totally good pick for the next weekend too. I think some of those things are still going to be true. I think this deck beats up on like the Bant Flash deck we talked about. I think it beats up on the Esper midrange deck we talked about. You know, the deck is just very good and has a lot of real cards. It has a lot of play to it too. So
yeah, I think the thing that's crazy is that like this deck plays one mana Divination, and that's not the best draw spell in the deck. Like, it just has more card advantage spells that are better than even just playing one mana Divination. And yeah. I think as long as that's true, this deck will be a consistent player for as long as those cards are legal.
Can we just say that Chandra Fire Artisan just way, way, way better than anybody thought it was when it was spoiled?
Whoa, not did me. You not listen to the Even card. Odds podcast pick two set yeah. review?
Yeah, that card is one that I think people were sleeping on, especially the fact that it does all of the damage that it does. Like,
yeah, I've dealt like 11 damage with that card before. It's just so much.
It's so good. I don't know if anyone saw. I think it was round 13. It was a win in for Will Pullum between BBD, and he got to a point where Will just had BBD low, and BBD was like, "Well, he gets to use Chandra Tilt Ultimates because I can never attack and kill it because if I die."
Yeah, I've had that happen. Like, they're just like the number of people that just figure out, I'm just attacking face every single turn into double Goblin Chainwaller. What is happening? Like, I actually can't even attack.
It's insane. Chandra's very good. The ultimate's super powerful. She gets there very quickly, and card advantage in red decks is always pretty good. And yeah, she's very powerful. And it really can't be slept on how that she's like basically a Lava Axe at worst a lot of the time. And that's just sometimes good enough in your deck when you have all that card advantage. So
yeah, a Lava Axe that draws you a card, like at a minimum.
For sure.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think that wraps it up. I do have a couple of questions. Where do you guys think Nexus will be next week?
Well, so assuming we get the MCQ results from online, everything like that, I don't think it's going to be super high. I still think we'll have some results because I think the deck is powerful. And people might overcorrect for mono red. You know, there might be like this knee-jerk reaction. So I think it'll be there, but I think it's going to be pretty hard for it to win because I think the really prepared players are going to still have game plans for it and not sleep on it after even just 1 week. What about you, Trey?
Yeah, I would imagine it's still in the top five performers, though. I don't think that I would not expect to see it fall drastically.
Now, here's a question I have for you two. Do you think that's still going to be true in 2 months?
No, I just don't think that Nexus... I think that the thing that we miss as Magic players, because the games when Nexus is going off, it feels unbeatable, is that its win condition is a 7-mana card. Mm-hmm. And, like, well, if you just think that all 7-mana cards are unplayable, you should probably reconsider that. Like, there are certain situations... I mean, Grizzlebrand costs 1,000 mana, and so does Emrakul, so, like... That's just not the case.
It costs 3 mana.
I show and tell jokes. But I think that Nexus has an inherent weakness that is pretty exploitable in a card pool as small as Standards.
Yeah, but I think that it's one of those decks that will cycle throughout the format. Like, it will have weeks where it doesn't perform very well, and it'll come back and have weeks where it performs. And I think that will continue to happen. And that the deck was fairly consistent before, and the additions of Tamiyo and being able to play like even less win conditions thanks to the Amass cards make it even more consistent than it was before. And so I think as a result of that, it's not going to vanish, but I think it will cycle. I don't think it's going to be consistent just every week, but I do think that it will cycle through the format.
Yeah, I think there'll be weeks where it's good, and I also think that the less rounds you're playing, the better it is. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So, will I owe Kyle $50? Mason Clark.
They're not gonna ban Nexus of Fate. if you're in your car or you're home listening to the Great Constructive Criticism podcast sponsored by Oasis Games and you're thinking, just ban Nexus so my life can be better, I understand your plight.
but they're not going to ban this card. We're so close to it being gone. Bannings are so damaging, and there's enough cards that answer this in the format that if you don't want to lose to Nexus of Fate, we talked about three decks in our top five that don't lose to Nexus of Fate, four if you count our top six. So there are plenty of decks to play.
I think White Weenie Splash Blue beats it. I think Red beats it. I think Bant beats it. I think
I was thinking Bant, Red, and Esper mid all hard beat it. I think.
Are we saying literally every single deck in this?
I think Gruul and Esper mid range basically auto fold game one, but I think after board's even. So I give the slight advantage to Nexus there, but it's not like, you know, 70-30. I think it's like 55-45 type thing, you know. So
sure.
Yeah. I think that there are decks you can play that can beat it. Now, you're all mid-range grindy control cards. Back in my day, Magic was about how many cards in hand, not how many points on the board. Decks aren't going to beat it. But maybe we can't play those decks at this moment. Or you just accept you can't beat the Nexus deck, which is fine. If you're going to do an event like, I'm never going to beat Nexus of Fate, that's cool. That's your choice. Just don't complain about it.
Wow. Okay.
Hey, trademark, am I right?
I thought we were just gonna end the podcast there for whatever.
I didn't know were we supposed to, because I could. I think we should probably say goodbye. That's a deep cut for the Even Odds fans out there. I see you. I see you.
So thank you so much to everybody for listening. You can follow me at Spencer H. You can follow Trey at Trey MC. You can follow Mason at Mason E. Clark. You can follow the podcast at CCMCG. You can follow my stream on the Constructive Criticism Twitch at twitch.tv/CCMCG. You can follow Mason's stream at twitch.tv/TheMasonClark. Please leave us a review on iTunes if you get a chance. It really helps the podcast out. And yeah, we'll see you all next week.
Bye, everyone.